It's a free booster station, you know, to the tune of $1 million that we've, you know, something that was going to have to be fixed at some point.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This is a free fix.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial with the knobs, or maybe the push buttons, 102.9. Here in our glorious studio again today to talk water and sewer. Doug Martin, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having us again.
Yeah. It's been a bit. We'll get into that. But yeah. Thanks for doing this. This is going to be a good update.
Yes. We're always excited to come see you and talk about all the good things, sewer and water.
Water and sewer. Yeah. And Jake Stanley. Jake, good morning.
Morning to see you. Thanks for having us back.
Absolutely. So for the listeners, thank you for joining us. We did do about 90 minutes back in 2021. Yes, it's time flies when you have
fun.
It's
crazy. It's crazy.
That went from the well to the faucet all the way through on the water side. And then in 2024, similarly, about 90 minutes, and we split it out into three parts each time. Those audios you can still find on the Water Sewer page, so
correct.
Thank you for posting them there. That's
yep. They're right on our main homepage there,
right
in the front.
Yep, and they're still evergreen to that extent, right?
Yeah.
There's, and we're going to cover the changes, so now you can add this one to that for updates. Come yep. See, that'll be good. So I think we've got, as we said, we did sewer most recently. We'll start there because I think you've got some additional water projects that we can spend some time on. So
yes, yeah, definitely a lot going on.
Yes. So the last time we talked, we were in advance of actually getting that final approval for Beaver Street, and you got it, and you're well underway.
Yeah, yeah, we're more than, what, two-thirds done with our Beaver Street Interceptor project. $33 million. I think it was the largest infrastructure project in the town's history, right?
Yep. Not certainly infrastructure project and non-school building.
Non-school
definitely.
Building, definitely, right? But yeah, no, we're making really good progress. Right now, night work is happening on Route 140. Generally, that's going from Monday nights through to Friday mornings.
Right.
Early Friday mornings. They're doing, they're installing the force main that's going to pump, you know, run from the Beaver Street Interceptor pump station at the rec center department site.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can see that building now, so that will go from there all the way up to kind of where Dunkin' Donuts is on that old West Central Route 140
right.
area, right? Yep. So they're kind of just past Taco Bell now, and they're working their way up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And all things are going smoothly.
Good. So, and with the shift to the nighttime, certainly it is a lot less traffic issues, because we were anticipating, and there had been some kind of traffic going around, et cetera, but
yeah.
Now it's night. We don't have to worry about that.
Yeah,
generally.
No, it's been, you know, we're working with the DOT because they own that section of,
sure.
of road there.
Yeah.
So we had to get approval from them, and they kind of dictated kind of what those work hours were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a window during the day, but it just wasn't a long enough window to actually make good progress.
Right.
So the contractor decided it's best to go at night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's been pretty smooth. We had that one time where we had to ask Taco Bell to close a little bit early last week, but they obliged, and it all worked out fine. So
okay.
So we're moving along on Route 140. Some things that you'll see upcoming in the next, you know, 3 to 6 months will be the Beaver Street at the MBTA crossing.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. So that's a priority area for us. We're going to have to close down the tracks for a weekend. We're waiting on Keolis and MBTA to schedule that for
sure.
us.
Because that's going to be an yeah. interruption of the schedule. They'll have to do a bus routing.
Correct, yeah. It'll be a bus routing from Forge Parkway
to
the,
downtown.
The new downtown mm-hmm. station there.
Yeah.
I just saw that article. That looks beautiful down there, by the
way. Mural yeah. around is just...
That's awesome.
It's priceless.
It's good.
Yeah.
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 So we're waiting on that schedule. Obviously, once we know that, we'll put that out
mm-hmm.
on our channels and let everyone know.
Yep.
We're looking to get the Beaver Street pump station started up at least locally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it won't go through that force main yet. But like kind of get everything moving.
Make sure things are plugged in and connected and doing what they're supposed to do.
So that should happen sometime in November.
Okay.
We'll kind of just cycle the water through and see how that's going. But then overall, the project, we're still on schedule, on budget. So we're looking at final completion sometime in the July timeframe, July of 2026.
Right.
So we should see a lot of the paving road work happen next spring, which will be good. So
when after all the rest of the construction is done, give it some time to settle it before paving over it.
Correct. Yep.
And I think even from the last notice I saw, it's another maybe 6 or 8 weeks if the weather holds before they kind of take a break for nighttime construction.
For the Route 140 work, we're anticipating another 6 to 8 weeks for that nighttime work. And then at some point we'll get the go-ahead to do the Beaver Street work, and then we get a couple other spots, one spot on Grove Street to finish up, and then another spot over on, I believe it's West Central, between the 99 and BJ's.
Okay.
There's an elevated area there. We're going to install some helical piles, basically just a big screw, right? And it they'll put the sewer pipe on top of that.
So you elevate the pipes rather than bury
them. There's a pipe that's already there that's elevated. What we need to do is add new piles and a bigger pipe, because now we got more flow going that way.
I recall seeing that, because that's right by 99 opposite the old Carbon or whatever.
Across from Glen Farm. Over there.
There was a little... There's actually water, I think, that goes underneath there.
There is, yep.
Because that feeds the water flow. That feeds
part of the Mine Brook tributary.
Because that feeds the water wheel at the, or used to water wheel fed that. I forget which way the water flows.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're excited that that's finally wrapping up. I mean, it's crazy to think it was a 3-year project and we're, you know,
almost done after
less than a year away. So
spending what, 10, 15 years talking about it?
Yeah. I mean, it started well before I got here and whatnot. So yeah, it's been a work in progress. So
definitely,
it's exciting to see. Otherwise, on the sewer side, we just started our phase 9 sewer rehab work.
Okay.
So that is where we have our contractor, National Water Main, coming in. This week they're doing some CCTV and cleaning of the sewer line work. So we posted that on our website and on Facebook. And then what that will do is in about 3 to 4 weeks' time, they'll come back with the liner and line those pipes. We're focusing on a lot of cross-country areas, which are, you know, historically areas that are prone to root intrusion and inflow and infiltration. So
let's develop that a little bit. CCTV, closed caption TV. So they're sending kind of a monitor through a camera through, taking pictures of what's in the pipe.
Taking pictures of the pipe, so that will help them determine and confirm what they need to order for a liner.
Right.
Make sure they have the right size. It will also, as they're doing that, they're cleaning as well.
Okay.
Just to make sure that they get a good,
they'll have a good surface base for then putting the liner in, as opposed to, you don't want to paint on a cracked surface.
So then once they complete that work, it should be done by Thursday, Friday this week.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, they'll order the liner, and then they'll be back out in about 4 weeks.
Okay.
Install the liner. That takes about a couple weeks. And then a couple other, filler areas where they'll go back in and grout the service lines. So basically, you can picture the liner goes in, and then they got to cut out where the service is. So now we got this hole, right?
Oh, right.
And so we need to seal that hole against the service line. So that's the grouting part.
Part, and then the cross-country piece. So that visually, sometimes the pipes don't follow the roads.
Right.
They'll come to a point, but then if the road ends, the pipe may still go to another road across the country.
So all of our, both water and sewer, we do have pipes. We call them cross-country pipes. And exactly what you said. They don't follow the roadmaps. They still want to get from point A to point B. And with sewer, it's all gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not following the roads. You're following downhill.
Right.
So that might be through a side yard, out someone's backyard, through the woods, around a wetland, and into a sewer station. And that's what we're referring to in some of these cases.
Yep.
You'll wonder where these intersections are, and they don't actually exist. but it's where we actually connect two roads with a pipe.
They're not visible as to where they exist.
Right.
But you've got the map, you've got the easement, so people are already aware, they know this is going to happen, et cetera. But,
Yeah, we're excited. And that will continue on. We've already got phase 10 through, 15 planned, pretty much.
Okay.
We just finished a big kind of next phase report of the area off Pond Street for future lining. So we did some investigation and kind of, get a plan together. So we know, the next, five phases, what that's going to look like. So.
And all this work is something that, in my understanding, and certainly the listeners would be curious to confirm as well, but this is something that part of our sewer fees is part of your, quote, annual but multi-year maintenance plan, right? So you're budgeting some piece of ensuring these sections are, up to snuff in some phases of hitting the older, so the most at risk, and working towards, the betterment period.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's all built into our rates. We're planning to do about $500,000 a year in lining work, which we've been on par with. And ultimately what happens is whenever we can reduce the amount of groundwater that we're sending to the Charles River Pollution Control District in Medway, the less we get charged.
Correct.
Which is better for the ratepayers and more, funds that we have to do improvements. Kind of keep that cycle going. So.
Right. Because clearly if the pipe is leaking to the extent that groundwater is getting in and potentially on the cross country, a tree happens to grow and the tree root goes through
the pipe. Roots find a way.
Yeah.
So this is the equivalent of kind of on the water side, the I&I. So you're just making sure that the pipe is integral. It's doing what it's supposed to, just letting the flows come in, not letting the flows go out, not letting anything else come in.
Yeah. Basically, if you think about a lining of a pipe, is now we're taking this old clay or different, material pipe that's kind of porous. It's, easy for roots to get in, and we're putting a PVC pipe in there, right? Now roots can't get in that PVC pipe.
It's going to be much harder to do.
Right? Yeah. Basically, that's what that liner is, right?
Yeah.
And actually, the liner itself is structural. It can hold up to weight.
Once you've put it in, it solidifies.
Yep, that original sewer line becomes the carrier of this new structural pipe. So it just tightens the system up and just gives us a better overall, conveyance. And we're sending less groundwater. So we don't want to treat groundwater.
Which on a regular basis clearly saves us monies. Period. But then also effectively lengthens and cheapens how long the pipe itself can last, as opposed to putting in a brand new one.
Yep.
Right.
You're effectively creating an almost new one.
Mm-hmm. Essentially. And, the one of the biggest costs for us, of course, and inconvenience is a backup, a blockage.
Sure. Yeah.
No residents want that.
No.
So roots cause that.
Yeah.
And by eliminating these root sources on these cross countries, we really increase our faith in constant regular flow in the right direction.
That sounds wonderful.
So always investigating, always doing cleaning. So you'll see our Vactor truck out there on a regular basis, cleaning lines, a lot of areas that we haven't been to in a while, developments. So just trying to make sure that we're
out there. You've got that kind of master plan of your system.
Correct,
where some trouble spots are. You address those more frequently than...
Correct, yeah. We hit those trouble spots. Usually that's the areas around the restaurants, areas of higher grease content, more flow.
Yeah.
So we hit those on a regular basis, but now we're, over the last, 4 years or so, we've really gotten out into the system in areas, like I said, older, residential cul-de-sacs.
Right. Yeah, more of a preventative maintenance rather than reactive.
Sure.
Correct. It's been helpful.
Yeah.
So.
And then the pump stations themselves are technically, I think, on the sewer side, it's the lift stations.
Lift stations, yeah.
The
23 of those.
The Swifters and other, quote, flushable wipes, those are not really flushable.
Those don't really exist.
Not flushable.
Those don't really exist.
Not flushable.
The packaging is a lie.
Yeah.
The packaging is a lie.
Baby wipes, we see a lot of that. But we routinely clean all our lift stations. By cleaning, I mean we'll suck them out, power wash everything. We do that every 6 months for the smaller ones, and a couple of bigger ones that we have, we do those quarterly.
Right.
So that's been helpful. And again, it's just preventative maintenance. So prevent, right, you know, the pumps going down and the blockages and the mm-hmm. backups. So.
And then to reinforce the message, I know you send it out periodically, and I share it as well, is that us users, baby wipes, those flushable wipes, please don't put them.
Don't flush them. Yes.
They are not supposed to go in the flush.
Yes.
Put them in the trash. And I think Brutus, who is it? Pee, poop, and
three P's.
Three P's.
Yeah.
Pee, poop, and paper.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
Nothing else.
Yeah. Nothing else.
So.
That's sewer.
Yeah, that's really it from a sewer perspective. Those are our two kind of bigger projects, obviously the BSI being the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as we get these developments that come in, we're always working with the developer and our consultant to look at how is the development going to
impact or create yep. volume yep. that's going to need
our
to be
system
addressed
and
by the system.
And what needs to be mm-hmm. repaired or enhanced. So that's, you know, that's worked out for us in some instances where we've gotten, you know, new pumps or, you know, updated controls, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So
that's part of the mitigation that's
correct.
Coordinated with the developer. And mm-hmm. I think one of the things that people may not fully understand, and I picked up a couple of years ago or maybe longer than that, but there are some sites that, as part of their planning, your coordination of planning, they'll kind of hold in their own tank and then flush through in the off hours
yep.
to mitigate that kind of onslaught. Or
yeah, we have a couple
system.
Locations like that out there. We try to minimize that holding time because the longer you hold it, the more septic it
sure,
becomes
sure.
and creates
yeah.
smells. But it's a balance, and we work with the developer and obviously try to improve our system as well. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, in an ideal situation, we don't want to do that.
Yeah,
correct.
That's the last resort, kind
right,
of.
Right.
Because now we're dealing with something we don't control.
Correct.
And hoping that whoever does control it is doing the right thing, which
because that side of it is private.
Right. They correct. Own it. They control it. We do not. We just get the sewage when it pumps.
Right.
Ideally, we want to work with developers and work out a system and a capacity where they're just gravitating into our system. And we are 100% in control of how that works,
mm-hmm.
And whether that's in the case of a new sewer station being installed and then, you know, basically handed over to the town,
right.
or updates made downstream that improve our existing stations. That's
so
how we that's how we work
recording.
With them.
Yeah,
that's
a good point by Jake. I mean, that's our preferred route, but there's some times where you just can't avoid it
because of the geographics and the situation,
yeah.
whether it's ledge or just elevation. Because it is gravity feed, sometimes you just
can't avoid it.
Yeah,
that's how we ended up with 23 lift stations. So.
It's not the perfectly designed, but it
no.
you know, 100 years ago when the Beaver Street pipe went in, they did not know how
yeah.
many connections we were going to have.
Correct. Yeah. It's just crazy that it's lasted, you know, that long too, right?
Right?
So,
yeah.
So
well, back then, every single pipe that tied into that was gravity. Nothing was pumped.
Nothing
prior,
was
just
pumped.
Everything gravity down to that point on Mine Brook.
Yeah,
the
whole original
town.
Design was all gravity. Yeah.
Yeah. And then as we grew and expanded, go up a hill. Well, some of that works, but if you start going down, mm-hmm. well, now you got to pump it up in order to get to it. So,
yep.
yeah. Yeah.
23 lift stations. No two are the same.
Yeah.
There's an opportunity for standardization there, but well, that's down the road.
Yeah, no, we're constantly looking at that too. So, what else through the sewer side? We've taken advantage of some gap grants through
yes.
MassDEP. We've gotten two of our stations on Grove Street updated with new pumps, controls, all through that grant. So that's
mm-hmm.
been great. Just submitted again for that grant for their. I think it's round four. That gap grant and hopefully up do the same thing at our Milliken pump station,
okay.
which is one of our first original bigger
sure.
pump stations. So for that, we'll go through. So we're always looking at ways to update and make the system better. So
mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah. So yeah. it's been working great.
It's flowing.
It's flowing.
To borrow that term.
Yes.
Yes.
As long as everything keeps flowing, then we're all good.
All right, so let's switch over to the water side. One thing I know you've been doing periodically is you've got a lead service pipe survey where people can help confirm if they actually have kind of lead connections.
Yes. Yeah. This is something that came through the EPA, that is being passed through, through DEP Massachusetts wise. And Jake's kind of taken the lead on that, so I'll kind of hand it over to him. But he's been doing a great job on filling that piece. So basically, we needed to categorize and make sure we had all the data collected for every service line in town. We have over 9,000 service lines.
And a service line is from the pipe. Your pipe goes along the street. So the service line is literally the line to the residence or the
from house. The water main that's in the street generally, all the way to the residence house. And we have actually a really good diagram of what that looks like on our website as well. So
yeah. And it's the 9,000 plus services is compounded by dual ownership.
Mm. Yes.
So the town owns half of that pipe, and the resident owns the other half.
Okay.
And many times those pipes are not the same material. Because the town may have updated their side with a new water main in the last 20 years.
Right.
The resident's side was not updated. So we're constantly in this battle of, we have documentation about side A, we don't know side B.
Right.
And the easiest way for us to identify the resident side, the private side, is a simply visual identification of the pipe coming through the foundation right before it hits their water meter.
Right.
And that's what we're asking residents help with, is getting that photograph to us. We have a portal set up right on the website. They can follow a link right to a map. The map will show if your house is known or not. If you have a little circle of your house that shows gray, we don't know yet. If it shows blue, if it shows yellow, then that means that we have identified, as far as we know, we are accurate to it. And that also changes.
Sure.
You know, we can think one thing and something was updated 20 years ago we don't know about.
Right.
I have a record says it was old pipe. You've updated to copper. Great. I get rid of one of my yellow dots.
Yes.
That's the whole goal. The ultimate mission is blue across the board.
Yeah. Blue is good. Yellow is galvanized. And red would be lead. We don't have any full lead service lines.
Okay.
We do have lead goosenecks.
Goosenecks.
And I think there's a good description on our website of what that is.
I recall seeing a picture at one point. Yeah,
but it's just a connector, a kind of a soft connector from the water main to the service line. And
right.
The service line in that case is always usually galvanized steel.
Yep.
So like not something that's not going to bend, right?
Right. It's solid, which is why they needed the gooseneck to make the connections, because otherwise there would have been multiple joints.
Exactly. Yeah. So back when they were running steel pipe to steel pipe, lead was the best fix.
Yes.
So yeah, we're constantly searching for that. We do have a selection of areas in town that even the town side, we don't have great records on.
Oh, okay.
Be that plans, tie cards. So in those cases specifically, we are going out and actually excavating.
Okay.
We're using our vacuum truck. We're digging a hole using vacuum excavation to literally take a photo of a pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to appease DEP and appease the law that
sure.
We have proven that this pipe is copper. We have a photo that this pipe is copper.
Mm-hmm.
When we do that, we'll dig down right at the service box. We'll get the residence side and we'll get the town side. So one hole, two photos. One hole, one photo, two pipes off the list. And that's slowly ongoing. The neighborhoods where we're doing it, I always knock on the doors. I explain to residents first what we're going to be doing. And most everybody's pretty on board. They understand.
Mm-hmm.
They're eager to find out whether or not they have a problem.
Sure.
And 99% of what we've excavated so far has shown copper, which is all good.
That's even better.
And out of the 9,000 plus services, we are now down to under 400 unknowns.
That's a pretty good number.
I'm pleased with that number. This is people working on this literally every day.
Yeah.
Our meter technicians in homes every day getting photos. I'm on the computer updating this map every day.
So there's a survey form, so they can take the photo, fill out the form, but you can take the photo in almost any way, as long as it's a photo.
Any way at all.
If you get us the photo, we'll take it. That's all we need.
Yep. Even if somebody shows me a photo on their phone, this is my service line, I'll take that.
Okay.
I'll take that. Obviously, something I can link to a document is better, but knowledge is power in this sense, and the mm-hmm. more data I can collect, the better. Ultimately, we have until the end of 2027.
Okay, so we still have some time. Yeah,
I need to get to zero if I can get to zero.
Zero unknowns. Yeah,
zero unknowns.
Because after 2027, I think it's October of 2027, all the unknowns will be considered lead.
Ah.
So replacement ratio purposes.
They'll need to be replaced, right. And that will affect our replacement ratio. Then we'll have 10 years to replace all of that. So we want to reduce those unknowns.
Sure. And that replacement at that time, especially if it's on the user side, customer side, then clearly there's going to be some coordination with you in order to do that.
Yeah, there's been a astounding amount of silence when it comes to advice on how to handle that, because every town is different.
Okay.
The ownership is different across the state.
Sure.
And as soon as you ask anybody from the government how they're going to handle that, there is not a single bit of advice offered. So I think it's going to be kind of up to everyone to figure out their own deal and how it's going to work out.
Likely because there's some money involved.
It's not cheap. It could be expensive.
There's a good amount of grants and funding out there, but those are going to the areas where there are full lead service lines.
True.
You know, mostly the cities, really older areas.
The older infrastructures.
So on one hand, Franklin's fortunate that we don't have full lead service lines. On the other hand, we do have a good amount of, you know, galvanized lines.
Yeah.
And goosenecks, and just the money's not there for that yet, right?
No.
So we'll see what happens once we get to that point. But right now, we're just kind of still in that data collection phase. Right?
Yeah. Got to scope the project fully before you can then turn around and get some funding or figure out how.
Couple things that are happening coming up is anyone who has a lead or a yellow dot.
Right.
Per se, galvanized requirement replacement will get a red letter coming up in December.
Okay.
Anyone who's unknown will get a yellow letter coming up in December. So those will be going out. We're required to do that yearly.
Okay.
So
this won't be the first time that they've
already received them too.
Yeah.
But that being said, there are updates every day, so we are finding some that we thought were copper, and with a photo, we've now known our Galvi and things
so
like that.
There'll be new people getting letters.
There might be some new folks that haven't seen it, and subsequently people who have taken the time to replace their service lines from the first notice we sent out last year. Those folks are very greatly appreciated. They're not getting a letter anymore.
Right.
It's copper.
Right.
They're off the list.
And assuming all that coordination happened and they updated you as well. So if something was done but they didn't update you, they may still get the letter.
Exactly. Yeah. People love calling to tell us when we're not right. So I welcome the call to say that we're wrong. I have a copper service. Please come check it out and happily show up and
I'll take
a look. Yep.
And then also just before we leave that point, whenever we do new water main projects, which we haven't done a ton lately, and you know we're trying to fund going forward, but we've set up kind of our next 5-year plan, so to speak, on areas where we do have those lead gooseneck lines.
Right.
So we'll remove those out
as
of the system.
Of
do our part up to the curb stop.
Sure.
Probably similar to what we did over on Fail Street when we did that water main, is that we'll offer the resident, if they have a galvanized requirement replacement line, we'll offer the contractor to give them a quote.
Sure.
And they'll pay directly to our contractor.
That should theoretically save some money. Somebody's already there. They're already doing the work. They just extend it for this a little bit. They just get a different check.
Yep.
You're not paying for extra mobilization. You're not paying for anything additional. It's going to be the best price they would ever get from a private contractor.
Right. And I think if you talk to the residents who took advantage of that over on Fail Street, they're very happy with that outcome.
And even to my perspective, yes, it's going to be less. They're already there. They're also going to guarantee, because they're connecting to themselves anyway. So you're going to get the right time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But by all means, if anyone receives a red letter and wants to be proactive and take care of replacing their service line, they're more, definitely go ahead. I recommend it.
Sure.
Sooner than later. And we have a list of licensed drain layers on our website. That you can contact contractors, that you can contact, get prices.
Known entities.
Shop around and plan for it.
Like everything, the prices may vary depending upon the circumstances, their timing, et cetera.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. That's a lot of work going on there that Jake's been dealing with every mm-hmm. day, so he's doing a great job.
Yes, definitely. A lot of work keeping that flow going.
Yes.
And then you also have the WaterSmart app. So for the water quantity, while we're amongst the best conserving as a community anyway, mm-hmm. from what I understand,
yeah.
People can actually get to that next level of detail once the meters, and I believe there's also a process. Some meters are good for installing that, but you're getting to the other meters to make sure that they can do that.
Yeah, so all of our accounts are in WaterSmart. So WaterSmart is our data portal that customers can interact with.
Mm-hmm.
They can see their usage, their build usage. They can compare that against other residents in town and kind of see where they're at.
Right.
A lot of helpful tools on there to help identify leaks,
mm-hmm.
And whatnot. So
sure.
It's a really good portal. We use it to send out notifications if there's a water leak or, you know, we're doing flushing.
Right.
We kind of use it as our tool to interact with customers. So
okay.
We recommend if anyone hasn't signed up for it yet, we recommend that you do.
Yeah.
There's a link on our website to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently, within the last year and a half, we've updated our meter reading infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
where about 60% of our meters now are being read on an hourly basis.
Almost quite real time, but
almost
not quite.
yep, which is great. So it's great. I look at it as great data from
sure.
from the user's perspective.
Yeah,
you really can take ownership of the water that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And the system is set up to alert you, I think, if you go over 2 times your daily usage.
Right.
What we recommend, though, as you noted earlier, Steve, is that initially when you get signed up and you start collecting that data, it's based that alert is based on the prior usage.
Right.
So it takes a little while to learn it's your specific kind of pattern, right?
Yeah.
But once it learns it, then those number of alerts goes down. And you have control, too. You can set that up, I think, up to like 8 times. Like, if you don't want to know every mm-hmm. time you go over twice.
Twice as much.
So the user has control, or you can just shut the alerts off altogether.
You can turn them
off,
right, if you don't
it's
want
really
to know.
It's really up to you.
Yeah, I remember when
it's a great tool.
We're a household of two, and clearly we get visitors from time to time, our own household stuff. We won't run the dishwasher maybe every couple of days. We'll do the clothes wash maybe once a week. If both of those combined, then the alerts would be changing. But if after like 3 months, it kind of knew our mm-hmm. regular process.
Yeah.
You know, when we have a big party and you get the household of 20 people,
yeah.
you get some more flushes naturally. And you may catch something then, especially
right.
if we do the dish and the wash itself. And then, poof, you get the spike.
Yep.
And but at least it's explainable, too.
Absolutely. And all this information and the way that we try to get it out to the residents through WaterSmart and through our new reading software.
Mm-hmm.
Very core of this is it can save you money.
Yes.
If there is an ongoing leak in your home that you may not know about.
Correct.
A toilet running, a slight drip somewhere, mm-hmm. someone left the hose on outside just
sure.
a little bit.
Yeah.
You don't think about it, but that can equate to thousands of dollars if it runs for weeks and weeks and
sure.
weeks.
We see it
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone's coming in, I didn't know I had a leak, and you look at their bill and
like, yeah, you're just like blown up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
There's no worse feeling than getting a $5,000 water bill when you're used to spending $600-$700
yeah.
a quarter.
Well, and yeah. having recently spent a week, I went back to, and sure enough, during the weeks we were away, so nobody was in the house, it was flatlined. It was zero.
Right.
So, yes.
That's good.
Knock
yeah,
on wood, that's
good.
The way it's supposed to be.
But, yeah, I mean, now that we're bringing in this hourly data for those 60% or so,
mm-hmm.
that number continues to grow. What you'll be able to see is that at night, you know, those times where there shouldn't be no usage,
sure.
if you're seeing usage, then you got a leak. And it's
yeah.
usually your toilets, right? It's the flapper.
The flapper.
Flapper valve on the toilet. They
yeah.
really only last like 5 to 7 years. So,
mm-hmm.
Those are one of the easiest things to change, but
yes.
you just don't realize it.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
And the accuracy of this was spelled out to me almost immediately. I was on the phone with a resident. We were going back and forth for a few weeks. He had concerns about his water usage. And I was able to see through this data that you have intermittent usage 24 hours a day. there's water flowing, not constantly, but occasionally,
somehow, all day and all night. Yeah.
So I presented that to him as a, this could be a concern, and he goes, no, we have a newborn. We're up all night.
Yes.
But that's how accurate it is.
Sure.
You know, it can see that someone has a newborn and they're not sleeping.
Yeah.
But like that was immediately debunked as one of the problems. No, they're just actually awake that often.
Yeah, so you need to understand the data. Like, and I explained, we would, you know, there's only the two in the house and the dishwasher would run every couple of days. So we would see that spike when the dishwasher ran. And then, you know, we'd get the alert for that. And then a little bit, you know, we'd do the two or three washes and whew, it spiked that day. It spiked again when we did both the dishwasher and the clothes washer at the same time. We hit a new spike. And then after that kind of settled after that 3 months or so, rarely an alert at this point, which is the way it should be.
Yeah. So. No, it's a great, great tool, and we're happy that we're able to offer it to the residents.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just hopeful more people take advantage of it and use it however they see fit.
But, sure, definitely. For alerting or not.
Or not. Yep.
Yes. Water quality comes up from time to time, colored water or discolored water, and I know you've the system work sometimes generates that, and you also do the annual hydrant flushing to help mitigate that over time.
Yes. Yeah. So generally we're going to get discolored water calls or complaints when there's a change in flow or a higher flow than normal, right? So that happens, obviously, if we have a water main break.
Sure.
Happens if there's a fire. Happens sometimes when we're just doing our flushing, right? But it also recently happened when our tanks dropped kind of lower levels than they have in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And flows were just going all different ways. And,
right.
And we had areas that have never experienced, you know, discolored water that were now.
Okay.
In that case, we always welcome people to give us a call, shoot us an email, let us know. Because the more that we know and the data, then the better off we are. We're not constantly on Facebook. I do look at it, but the first place to go is not Facebook. Give us a call, shoot us an email right from our website. You can get Jake and I our email on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to shoot us an email and just let us know. And don't feel like you're bugging us or you're, you know.
We need to know about it.
We need to know. If we don't know, then we can't fix it. Right. And I tell residents that all the time. So.
Mm-hmm.
And the scenarios where, you know, like we had the other week when the tanks were lower, we're in drought conditions, we're in full water ban, we can't necessarily come out and open every hydrant in the neighborhood
and flush
to clear that line out. We're working against ourselves at that point.
Right.
What we're doing could make the problem worse.
Worse, right.
So, you know, we really have to gauge what we're seeing. Is it a slight discoloration or are you seeing coffee come out of your faucet?
Mm-hmm.
If it's a slight discoloration, we're probably going to ask you to wait for a few days, see if it alleviates itself, and we're going to try to gain more level in our tank so we can come out there and do something about it. And we're very, very straightforward with folks about that. And when people call us and speak with us and email back and forth, I find that it might take time to get the results they want to see, but they're in constant communication, and I think most of the time it ends well for all of us. Everyone's happy at the end.
Yeah,
it's the folks that don't reach out, don't start the dialogue, and just are bitter and disgruntled, and they're on Facebook. Like, we can remedy this. So please call us. We'll have crews out there. We'll investigate. And we can even have people come in the house.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have our operators come in. They'll do some sampling right there on the property and confirm water quality, because that's a big concern.
Sure.
It's discolored. Is it safe?
Right.
And unless we've notified you prior, yes, it is. You know, there's the constant sampling that we are doing in town weekly, bacteria samples weekly, and by the law, if we have any issues, we will notify everybody.
Correct.
So when you just see that discoloration, it doesn't mean that we're in an emergency situation.
Mm-hmm.
It just means something's going on.
Right.
Yeah. Now, we understand it's obviously not pleasant to drink or to look at, but it is safe.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that by, like Jake said, all the testing we're required to do.
Yeah, and that you publish annually. The PDF is there for the water quality report.
Yeah, we have our water quality report that's published annually, but at the same time, if you want to see up-to-date information, the Environmental Energy Affairs database. If you Google that, they publish all our drinking water data.
So all your data that you do on a regular basis goes to them, and that's visible.
Yeah, once the results have been sent to the Mass Department of Environmental Protection, the EEA, Environmental Energy Affairs database, picks those up and puts them on their data on their website. Okay. So that data is out there for anyone to to view at any time.
I'll add that link to the show notes because I haven't followed that
one before. I'll send you that one. That's a good one.
It's helpful too because you do get the public public records requests, and that's an easy one.
That's
we
an
can
easy
link
one.
You to right. the, to EEA and
everything
you want is right there.
Yeah, and then one other term we can take the opportunity, you mentioned the water ban, and at least in my reporting I know of three instances. Once related to the pump fires at it was over 4th of July, there was a fire at the pump station that obviously took out, I think, what, two wells from our supply or however many. So we had a self-imposed water ban until you finally fixed it, what, in Thanksgiving or Christmas?
Yeah, that was before I started, but Jake's very familiar. He was the person that discovered the fire. So,
yeah.
That was our Fisher Street plant.
Yeah, that was a water ban due to equipment failure.
Correct.
Which can happen.
Right.
Doesn't happen often, but yeah, we were full water ban.
Once in the almost 20 years that I've been doing this.
So equipment failure, 4th of July, right as we get into the hottest part of the year, our main treatment plant is down.
Yeah. Not a good thing to happen.
Got to go full ban. And the residents cooperated. The residents all got on board, and we made it through.
Right.
Thanks got low, but we made it through.
Mm-hmm. And then the water drought status has also led the state to issue water bans at least twice that I'm aware of.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Whenever we hit a level two or higher, we kind of change our conservation restrictions.
Level
three
level.
And up, it's a automatic outdoor water ban restrictions. Yeah.
Right.
And even I think last winter we were in a level three for a good part
of
it.
For a while.
Which is hard because obviously the thing that you think about when you think about water ban, right, is outdoor watering.
Sure. Yeah.
So how do you, in the winter, no one's out, I mean, it shouldn't be, right? So how do you restrict that?
Right.
So that's always a struggle.
At that point, we really get to public education on, you know, internal water use, you know, shorter showers, don't leave the faucet running while you're brushing your teeth.
That's where programs like WaterSmart come into play, right? And can help you as a resident, as a user, take control of your water usage.
Right.
So
instead of running the dishwasher, if you don't need to run it daily, you run it every couple of days.
Right.
And that minimizes
certain things that you could do to conserve water, save yourself money, and everyone works out in the end.
Every piece of advice we give out is literally to save residents money.
So nothing wrong with that part.
Yeah.
And then as part of the state permit, which I think you've got, what, maybe 5 years left?
We're on our last 5 years of our Water Management Act permit. It's a 20-year permit. So as part of that, you know, we're preparing for what that next 20 years is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing our, you know, our back and forth with DEP right now on some of that. But as part of that, that permit dictates our yearly conservation restriction, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is not a water ban, and I think, you know, we talked about this on the last...
Social calls it a water ban, but it's not.
It's a conservation restriction. You're allowed to water once a week on your trash day outside of the hours of 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and honestly, it's just good practice, I think.
Right.
I think your lawns, you know, after you do that, what they need, like an inch of rain a week, essentially.
The watering techniques that the conservation restrictions suggest promote a better lawn,
promote
a better,
better
landscape,
healthier,
a better garden, everything, you know, the infrequent longer watering, not during the daylight hours, is the best thing for a lawn.
Sure.
So that's what we promote, and if you follow that, you'll have a successful lawn in most cases.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the restriction is just looking at automated sprinkler systems.
Correct.
Right. We're not. You can handheld water
anytime
your garden, whatnot. You can wash your car anytime. You can, you know, power wash your house, your driveway, whatever you need to do. But that's not where we're looking at. It's really just the irrigation systems. And I've said it before in front of council, we can tell when people are irrigating. We see it, right? That's those hours from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. where we see our tanks going down, where we had been going up all night.
Right. And then all of a sudden,
and then
shifts.
All of a sudden, between that 2 to 5, and you can't tell me that there's no one up between 2 to 5, but we know where that water's going. So
right.
We do have enough water in town. Like I've said before, we're permitted to take 3.4 MGD, million gallons per day, out of the ground. That's what our current Water Management Act permit indicates. On average, we're taking 2.5 million gallons per day.
So well under, to the benefit of all of us, because we're conserving and thereby also paying less.
Paying less as a resident, right? So I constantly get asked, well, with all this development, how do we, and these water conservation restrictions and water bans and whatnot, how do we have enough water? Well, we do, and the numbers show it.
Right.
What we don't have enough water for is everyone irrigating 24/7, right? So that's not what the system's designed for. The system is designed to provide water for health and sanitary uses and fire protection.
Sure.
And that's what our goal is. So,
And that's one of the key pieces. I know certainly the Franklin Fire Department got their ISO certification, and that was a key component that you contributed to, because you had to do the water pressure to maintain their certification access.
We helped them a lot with that, and you know, we got reports and studies, and just how we maintain our system really helped get the fire department that ISO 1 classification. So it was great. I mean, the short of it is, you know, we do have enough water. We're required to do the conservation restrictions every year, from June through September, and if there's a drought that's been issued, then we're required to step up our restrictions or go to a ban at that point. So we abide by the permit because we have to. And so we just ask for residents to do their part as well. So
we're all drawn from the same groundwater source, regardless
from
of
the same hose,
regardless of a private well or a town water system. We're all pulling from the same finite resource, and that's what everyone has to remember.
It's finite.
It's not unlimited.
Well, and that's where we need the moisture, the rain, the snow, to refill those aquifers. We don't have enough rain, don't have enough snow, a la winter. Then that's where the levels just change.
And actually, the industry, we just celebrated Imagine a Day Without Water. I think it was, Friday last week? Last week. But basically, picture going to your faucet, opening it up, and no water coming out, right? So it really is a finite resource. There's a lot of that goes into getting the water from the ground to your house.
Right.
And we're dealing with that every day, 24/7, 365, holidays, snowstorms, whatever.
Fourth of July weekends.
Fourth of July weekend. This job never stops. The men and women that do it are on call 24/7. They're always ready to respond.
Right.
And if you think about it, the one utility resource that is served to residents' homes in our country that is required for life.
True.
You know, water is one of the basic three requirements to survive. Is being sent to your home in the oldest infrastructure in the country. It's the oldest pipes in the ground.
Sure.
Is what the most vital resource is coming through.
Right.
The oldest pump stations, the oldest pipes, the oldest valves. So something's gonna give sooner or later.
Yeah.
And we have to catch up and improve these, or things are gonna change.
Right.
And with that said, through the council, we're constantly investing in our water sources and our system as well.
And storage tanks is part of the system. That's one of the things that popped up recently, I think, in that last presentation, in terms of kind of the outlook for the next X amount of years.
Yeah.
There's some significant expenses coming, but
there are. Yeah,
and we need to prepare for those.
We have a design ready to go to replace their hillside tanks, the oldest our second oldest riveted steel tank is the 1888 tank.
1888. Still in service.
In the country.
In the country, right next.
Second oldest, second in, the oldest country.
In the country. Ooh. Still in service.
Right next to it is a tank from 1928, same okay. construction, riveted steel. So both those tanks, we have a plan to demolish both of those and build a new tank in that
okay.
location there. Our other tanks are not as old, but they sure. need some repair work.
Right.
So we have kind of a project out there that we need to do that. Mm-hmm. But both pieces obviously need funding.
Sure.
But fortunately or unfortunately, kind of PFAS is taking over that funding for us, and we only have the bandwidth and capacity to do so much right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got our Well 7 project that started
over a year ago now.
About a year ago now, mm-hmm. over a year ago now.
Yeah, because that went offline because it had triggered the PFAS levels.
Correct, yeah. Once that triggered the state levels, we took it offline and immediately got started on piloting and figuring out what we had to do there.
Right.
So that construction will actually be wrapping up in March. We should hopefully have that online for next spring, which we're excited about.
Yeah.
Great source quality of water over there, obviously, other than the PFAS. Once we filter that out, then mm-hmm. we'll be good.
Sure.
So that project's doing great. The building's up. We're doing site work this month. So the other one that just started that's near and dear to Jake's heart is the Fisher Street
yes.
rehab.
The 4th of July is mentioned already
yes,
a couple of times.
Yeah. So that plant kind of reached the end of its useful life.
Because if I recall, you didn't even you had to craft parts in order to get it back online. They weren't readily available parts.
No, we had to special order the filtration vessels mm-hmm. post-fire in
right.
2019,
right.
which took a while to come in and of themselves. And when we did that, we were notified that this was our last go-round.
Yeah.
These vessels would not be available ever again. So to keep that plan running with the current system was going to involve a major expense to update to their newest tech.
Okay.
We weren't that impressed with the old tech.
Ah.
So wasn't yeah. a big selling point for us. So yeah. that's why yeah. we looked into these alternatives. And
yeah, so we've gotten away. This rehab will we've demoed all of that ultrafiltration equipment that's been in there, which is just an energy hog. We had to pump it four times before it even got into the out into the system.
Yeah.
And we're going with our tried and true green sand plus pressure filtration equipment.
Okay.
Similar to what we did at the Grove Street water treatment
yeah.
plant, which
yeah.
has been operating phenomenally for us. So that's what we'll have at Fisher Street,
mm-hmm.
Which will be great, as well as we're adding an addition in the back to treat for PFAS. PFAS wasn't really a concern there. It's under the state guidelines.
Right.
But looking at the EPA regulations and kind of what was coming down from the federal government, yeah, it was close enough, right?
Yeah.
So actually by throwing that in there, we were able to get on the state revolving fund mm-hmm. loan, which is great. It's a minimum of 1.5% interest rate. The PFAS portion of that loan will be 0%. We'll be eligible for loan forgiveness, which we did get on Well 7. I forget the number off the top of my head, but
right.
that's been
yeah.
presented.
Sure.
So these are all avenues of funding that we're getting back, right? Just the 0% alone on the Well 7 project has saved us thousands upon thousands of dollars just in financing, right?
Sure,
so,
absolutely.
Good.
0% is a great way to
yeah,
finance.
It's a great way. Yeah. So yeah, obviously those two projects have kind of taken up a lot of our funding and capacity right now. But looking ahead, once these treatment things are done, tanks is obviously a big one. Water mains, we want to continue on our water main replacement program.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to figure out ways to start funding that again through
mm-hmm.
our retained earnings.
Sure.
So you might see that come up this year. We might actually hold it back and wait for the following year
okay.
For capital funding.
Sure.
We're going to see where the numbers shake out.
Yeah.
But with the water main projects, that will help. Like I said earlier, we're identifying areas where those lead goosenecks are. So
mm-hmm.
we're kind of
coordinating
all that, right?
Yeah.
And then ultimately, you'll get a new road out of it, right, for those areas.
Right,
so.
And that's coordination with the other
yeah.
collaborators to do the roadside. Once you're going to dig in and put in new pipes, then you might as well do the road at the same
time. Using our stormwater utility, using our Chapter 90 money, it all comes together as one whole project, right?
Sure.
Obviously, it's done in stages, but that's been the great program for the town. So we want to continue with that. Another project that people may have noticed is our Panther Way pump station that just got constructed right at the corner of Veterans Memorial and Panther Way near the ice rink.
Yep.
So that pump station was completely funded through a MassWorks grant.
Okay.
It was like over $1 million, which was great. Part of the Eaton Place and senior housing that's going on, the new senior housing that's going
Franklin
on.
Franklin Ridge.
Franklin Ridge, yep.
Yep.
So that's been great. We got a road in there. We got a new water line, new sewer line up through to that Franklin Ridge site. In addition to the new pump station. So that pump station will now serve Eaton Place, Franklin Ridge, as well as into the Bright Hill neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
Bright Hill currently right now is served by another station over on Oak Street at Irondequoit.
Okay.
That station will go away. This new station will serve that whole area.
Okay.
So folks in that Bright Hill neighborhood will get a notice from us relatively soon about the startup procedure that we're going to be doing for that station. Just by the nature of we're coming at it from a different end of the system, they're going to experience discolored water from the reversal flows.
It'll be a different flow.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing a lot of flushing in that area and then really working to get everything settled down. So hopefully in the end, works and everything settles out.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be coordinating with those residents. So we're excited for that one.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And the existing Bright Hill Booster Station is dated. It's an older station.
Yeah.
Older controls, older pumps.
Right.
So this is, a huge boon to us and
very
the residents.
Timely.
It's a it's a free.
It's a free upgrade.
Yeah. It's a free booster station, to the tune of $1 million that we've, something that was going to have to be fixed at some point.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This is a free fix.
Absolutely.
So we're very excited for this. And the more stuff like this we can get done, the better it is on the residents for, the costs of everything.
Definitely.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So those are the three bigger water projects that are happening right now. So there's a lot with the sewer and this that's keeping us busy. That's for sure.
You don't have a lot of spare time.
No. No.
But we thank you for taking this time to help explain all this, because there's a lot going on.
Yeah. So, always happy to come out and talk to residents and talk to you, Steve. So
sure.
Appreciate you.
No, I think the info is great. One other piece that was kind of a news item, and I think it doesn't necessarily apply here, although we can never say never, but there had been, I think it was the 60 Minutes, and the Globe did an article about kind of a water system hacking in one of the Mass communities.
Yeah, Littleton Light, what is it, Light Electric and Water, something like that, the utility up there in Littleton, Mass. Great, 60 Minutes did a great piece. I think the article in the Globe is equally as good. Just on the threat that we face as a utility industry, right?
Sure.
The water and sewer industry, from cyber security and cyber attacks from China and our other adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately for Franklin and a lot of our systems are not connected to the internet. We do that on purpose.
So you could kind of like close
the
network.
We're trying to close, keep everyone out, right? But like you said, you can never say never, and but we're always vigilant. That's something that comes up every year or that we're required to look at through the state. So we've done exercises with them twice now with our IT department, and everything's checked out. So, but we're constantly vigilant on those threats, right?
Sure.
That are coming out. So.
Well, and even when you're buying a dishwasher or refrigerator, it can be Wi-Fi enabled.
Everything's connected now.
Really,
Well, that's the nature of the technology now, is every single advancement is for convenience.
True.
So sure, if you're working in an industry and you get an alarm at 2 a.m, an app showing you what that alarm is,
that's
would
helpful.
Be great.
Yeah.
But that app's something on the net, and that's now an access point.
Sure.
So it's always, that offer of, hey, here's this new technology, but we regularly just say no.
Right.
Just say
but
no.
Like creating that kind of closed network, you can still take some benefit of that, but you're isolated, firewalled, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to the extent possible.
To the detriment of the convenience factor for the operators, but it's right. a safety, health, public health thing, and it's sure. That everyone gets it, everyone's on board.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for doing that. I have a security background, so it's always one of my things that's like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah. yeah.
yes. Yep. Well, thank you again for taking time to do this. Hopefully the residents and listeners will be appreciative of all the good info.
Yeah, hopefully they are, and we want to thank you for having us on, and we want to thank you also, you know, thank you to all of our crew members out there every day.
Yes.
There's 34 DPW crew out there, there's 16 in the water and sewer side of things, and they keep it flowing every day.
Yes.
So if definitely. You see them out there, say thanks.
Yeah. We thank you every time we open the faucet, even though we don't physically say thank you. We're glad that right. the water's there.
Yeah, yeah.
If
yeah.
the water comes out and the sewer goes away, someone's doing something right.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Excellent.
So yeah, thank you, Steve. As always, we love talking with you, and just encourage the residents. Like I said before, if you know see something, let us know.
Right. Yeah. Then don't we'll put it on Facebook yeah, first.
We'll contact you first. We'll be able to react. So if sure. you let us know. So
okay.
Yep.
Good. Good. Well, thank you again, and to the listeners, thank you for listening. And a quick reminder: we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.